A Simple Thing, written by Iridan, read by Marianas. Chapter 31. Beroya. Ushib was not very happy to discover that Din and Paz had done their best to undo all of her hard work. Strel returned with Ushib at her back and an anxious Kieran bobbing along behind them both. Ushib took one look at Din and Paz, the pair of them slumped against each other on the floor, made the sort of deep, disgusted sound that only a Tuscan grandmother could make, and set about getting them both back on their feet, though she swore at Din with her fingertips while she did it. Din took Ushib's irritated insults in stride. She wasn't wrong, even when she implied that Din and Paz together had less intelligence than one sunstruck scurrier. She's seen this kind of thing before, Din thought wryly. There had probably been another way to get through to Paz, to get Din's point across. One that didn't involve bleeding everywhere or kicking Paz in his bad leg. He did start it, though. Strill supervised. If she was bothered by the sight of Din sitting there in the courtyard with his helmet on the floor beside his knee, she did her best not to show it. Ushib, for her part, had seen Din barefaced before and made no comment. Paz looked at the helmet a few times, his own scuffed helmet reflected in its impassive visor. But he didn't try to take it from Din. Paz tolerated Ushib's care well enough, with only a little grumbling when she made him peel back his kuta and show him the livid, awful color of his wounded thigh. Ushib was clearly used to pushing him around, at least. Back in the covert, Paz had never liked being the one who needed patching up. He'd always tried to get out of it, squirming away from Din when he'd been hurt in a spar, ducking out from under Annika's hands when she'd come at him with Bacta. Ushib didn't let Paz get away with any of that. When Ushib had finished with Paz, she turned to Din. Din needed stitches, which she provided. Her hands were steady and sure. She offered to take a look at the rest of him, able to tell that Din had more hurts than just a slashed arm, but Din declined. He planned to attend to the rest of his injuries in private. "The last thing I need," he thought, as Ushib grumbled at him and smeared pungent Jurab paste over his freshly stitched arm, "is for Ushib to get an idea of what Boba and I get up to together." Ushib was... She wasn't Boba's mother, Din knew that. Boba had declined formal adoption by the Spotted Anuba. He hadn't taken the blood rites. Din had never asked Boba how he felt about Ushib either. Boba was certainly fond of the old woman, cared for her, trusted her and her advice, was grateful for her help, content to keep her close at hand, in his kitchens, his makeshift medbay. None of that meant that Boba thought of Ushib as his mother. But Ushib thinks of Boba as her son, Din thought. Ushib had told him that. And that meant that Din didn't need her to see the evidence of what he and Boba did together. The livid bites on Din's thighs, the thumbprint bruises on his hips. He didn't need her smearing back down his sore balls either, some things a man needed to take care of by himself. Din tolerated the rest of her poking and prodding, though. It was useless to argue with Ajita. By the time Ushib declared, with a twist of her fingers, that Din and Paz both were probably going to survive their brush with stupidity, the last of Din's adrenaline had drained away. The ache in his gut had intensified, his right arm burned, his left shoulder throbbed. But Paz didn't lunge for Din's throat again once Ushib let him up, so Din supposed that a handful of aches, pains, and stitches was worth it. His fight with Paz had gone... Really, it had gone better than Din had hoped. He said he doesn't hate me, Din kept thinking. The thought was so bright and strong that it banished most of Din's sharper hurts into dull aches. It flooded his chest, danced on the back of his tongue. He doesn't hate me, and Strill doesn't hate me, and Jaig... Well, Din hadn't spent enough time with Jaig to judge whether or not the young warrior hated Din for being Darmanda, but Jaig had seemed willing enough to let Din and Paz sort out their disagreement on their own, and he'd gone along when Strill had told him that Din wasn't their enemy. That's more than I thought I could hope for. Din had expected, well, he'd expected Paz to react like he had. Honestly, Din had expected worse. Paz had gone after Din with a Verd knife, but if he'd been serious about killing Din, he wouldn't have bothered with hand to hand. He would have hit Din with the plasma cannon, cooked Din inside his armor. A brawl, even a brawl with a knife, was still just that, a brawl. It was more to make a point than anything else. Point made, Din thought, still wry, shaking his left arm out. He was still in the courtyard, sitting slumped against Paz. Climbing to his feet seemed like something that Din was going to have to work himself up to. Paz made no move to get up either, sitting back on his shebs with his legs kicked out, propped up on one elbow. Ushi had left the pair of them and went off down the hallway to take a look at Took's healing arm. Jaig was still with the kids. Strill was leaning against the courtyard wall, watching Din and Paz. "Well," Strill said, tone sour, once Ushib had left.
"Mebana?"
"Nas," Paz muttered. Din watched the exchange, interested. "Your covert, they taught you Mandoa," Din said, tilting his head back to look up at Strill. She eyed him for a moment, posture stiff and unsure, but nodded. "Not the covert," she said, "but my mother, she taught me some, what she could remember. Tamsin didn't like it, but my mother wanted to. She wanted to make sure me and my brothers knew at least a little. She's from Concordia. My mother, I mean. It was important to her for us to learn a little bit about where she came from. Paz told me that your covert, you didn't learn much." "No," Din said, turning that new piece of information over in his head. "Not much. We picked up a few words here and there, mostly from the training ring, but no one sat down to teach us."
"Palace was from Concordia."
Din studied Paz. He supposed that it was possible that Palace had taught Paz some Mandoa, since Palace had apparently taught Paz a few other things that he hadn't shared with the rest of the foundlings. But Din doubted it. Paz would have taught it to the rest of us, Din thought. By accident, if not on purpose. Paz would have held it over the rest of them, that he knew something they didn't, and he would have let the word slip during an argument or through a taunt. "She asked me what happened," Paz translated, "when we were fighting. Mebana." Din nodded, committing the word to memory to try out later. He wasn't sure that Stroh would like it if he repeated the word back to Paz, the way he did when he learned a new word or turn of phrase from Boba.
"Nas, that means nothing, right?" Din asked. He'd heard Boba say something similar before.
Paz nodded. Din snorted. "We're fine," he told Strill, piecing the conversation together. "Ushib says we'll be all right." "She said a bit more than that," Strill observed. She picked herself up off the wall and padded over to Din, wiggling her fingers. She seemed very talkative.
"You know any Tusken sign?"
She shook her head. "Paz knows a little." Din looked at Paz, surprised. Paz shrugged. "I remember a bit," he said gruffly. "From when you came back from Tatooine the first time. Annika remembers more, I think. It's a good thing to teach the kids. Gives them a way to communicate quietly without needing a comms array." Paz rubbed the side of his helmet. That made sense, Din supposed. Foundling's helmets weren't as advanced as a full warrior's. Din's helmet could do all sorts of things that a foundling's couldn't. A kernel of warmth kindled in Din's chest. "Paz remembers what I taught him," he thought.
"Ushib was mostly just calling us names," Din said. "She's not very... She had some things to say about our argument."
Din settled on the mildest term he could think of for what had happened between him and Paz. Strill caught him at it and snorted.
"Argument," she muttered.
Din and Paz both shrugged with one shoulder each, which made Strill snort again. "You're worse than the kids," she said. Din winced, but Paz coughed a little, a rough, chuckling sort of sound.
"We've heard that before," Paz admitted.
That was an understatement. Din and Paz had been squabbling like Hyanax cubs since they were kids. Strill eyed them both again. "But you're fine now," she asked. "You're not gonna try to kill Orivod in his sleep, Paz?" Din settled back onto his elbows, letting Paz answer that question. Din had made his own stance clear. He was not Paz's enemy. He wasn't a threat to Paz's foundlings, Paz's people. Paz was quiet for a minute. Then he said, still rough, "Yeah, we're
It's fine. Not fine, he tacked on, fingers curling against the sandstone floor. Because you're, well... He stopped, shook his head. You're you, he said, looking at Din. Din nodded. He understood what Paz was trying to say. And that means you're not walking the way of the Wurrok, so... So, Stroh cut in, firm. You're not gonna try and kill Orivod in his sleep, right? Paz sighed. Right, he confirmed. Din smiled at him. He couldn't help it. The kernel of warmth in his chest was expanding, glowing like a forge ember. Din could feel it behind his ribs, in his belly. You've got nothing to worry about from me, Paz muttered. He shrugged again, armor creaking. You're still looking out for us, so you can't be all that bad. For an Arweti. Thanks, said Din dryly. Paz just tilted his head. That was as good as Din was going to get. So where'd Babu Ushib go? Strill asked, looking between Din and Paz again. What's next? She said that she was going to go take a look at Took's arm, Din said. She'll probably check over any other injuries she's tended to while she's here. Your leg, Kieran's burn, anything like that. As for what's next... Din trailed off. He wasn't sure if Paz wanted him to tell Strill and Jag about the gathering of Mandalorians on Kronest, or if Paz wanted to talk it over with the Verdike in private. It's probably time to move you all, Din said, settling on that instead of the complicated issue of Bo-Katan Kryze. Strill's mother was from Concordia, Din thought. That wasn't Mandalore, but it was closer to Mandalore than I ever got. And Jag knew who Boba was. Have they heard of Bo-Katan? Paz could tell the rest of them about the gathering, if he wanted to. Din had done what Bo-Katan had asked. He'd told a Mandalorian of the tribe. It was up to Paz to decide if he wanted to share that information with the rest. Din wanted him to, but... But he has to choose for himself, Din thought. Paz's attention sharpened. To that village you were talking about. Din nodded. Mos Pelgo, he said. Why now? Strill asked, a frown in her voice. Is it because of the raid? It is, said Din. We're Fett, he clarified, trying not to make his position in Boba's court too obvious, despite how quickly Paz had sniffed out Din's new loyalties. Has been having some trouble with the Hutt cartel. Strill and Paz exchanged a quick glance. Why? Strill asked. Din hesitated. What do you know about Boba Fett? He asked. He looked between Paz and Strill again. You knew a little about him, he said to Paz. And Jag knew who Boba was on Arcanus. I don't know much, Strill admitted. Jag'll know more. He always chased stories of bounty hunters. He's wanted to be a Boroya since he was this high. She held a hand out at her hip. Boba Fett is one of the best, right? Din nodded. He was, he said. Probably still is, though he doesn't hunt much these days. He was. A few years ago, he was working for Jabba the Hutt. Din decided not to mention Darth Vader and the work Boba had done for the Empire. He'd just convinced Paz to calm down. Din didn't want to have to kick Paz in the bad leg again just to get him to listen. Then Jabba was killed, Din continued, once he was sure that neither Paz nor Strill would interrupt. And his operation was taken over by a Hutt ally, we think. Fett killed him a few months back and has been running things ever since. And he's not an ally of the Hutts, Strill said. He isn't, Din confirmed. Strill whistled. Darvod sure knows how to pick his enemies, then, she said. Paz grumbled. You shouldn't call him that, he said. What, Darvod? Strill sounded like she was grinning. But it's true, isn't it? He's not my brother. Darvod fits. When you say it like that, you make it sound like he is your brother, Paz growled. Boba Fett isn't one of us. Din bristled, ready to remind Paz that there were other Mandalorians out in the galaxy, other ways and creeds. No matter what Pallas and the Allor might have said, but Strill beat him to it. "He's not one of us," she agreed. "But he is with Orivod here, and you're okay with me, Orivod, which means that Boba Fett's okay with me, too. He was good with the kids, anyway. And he helped drag your Chakari Shebs out of trouble, Paz. He can't be all that bad." Din had already been pretty fond of Strill. It was hard not to be fond of her. She was a good Mandalorian, forthright and honest, a little mischievous but brave. She'd walked into Boba Fett's palace alone. But her easy defense of Boba, and her easy acceptance of Din, even though he was Darmanda, warmed him through his entire chest. "He isn't all that bad," Din broke in. "He's honorable. I don't think he likes you much either, Paz, but he's still... he's not your enemy." Paz made another rough, grumbling sound, but didn't argue any further. "So it was the Hutts who attacked the palace?" Strill asked, bringing the three of them back to the matter at hand. Din nodded. "Gorga the Hutt, specifically," he said. He chewed his cheek for a moment, not sure how much of Boba's current precarious position he was allowed to share with the Mandalorians, but decided that he'd rather have them fully informed so they could make the best decision about what to do next. "Boba's trusted my judgment in the field before," Din reminded himself. "We're pretty sure that Gorga is working alone, without the support of the rest of the Hutt Council," Din said. "Gorga wants to take the outfit for himself, bring it back under Hutt control."
"Better to have the Hutts as enemies than the Pikes," Paz rumbled.
At Din's sideways glance, he elaborated.
"Ran into them a few times this past year. Took a job for them right after we left Megiddo. They're relentless."
"They are," Din said. "The Hutts are... they can be relentless, too, but we're pretty sure that Gorga's not trying to glass the place. He wants the outfit for himself. He's trying to get rid of Boba, not destroy it completely." "And you're sure this Mos Pelgo's safe?" Strill cut in, sounding doubtful. "Safer than here? These walls are pretty thick." Din shrugged. "It's pretty safe," he said. "Boba's here. I'm here. Fennec Shand is here. Most of Fett's fighters and the seat of his power, too. The throne. Mos Pelgo's not much more than a speck of sand in the desert. And its people are survivors. The marshal there, Cobb Vanth, he's a friend of mine. He's..." Din trailed off again, not sure how much he was supposed to share about Cobb Vanth. "As tough as a crate dragon's hide," Din might have said. "As clever as an Anuba. He and his people are as hard to get rid of as a swarm of Kyrick flies." But Paz hadn't spent much time on Tatooine. He wouldn't understand what any of that meant. That Din was trying to say that Vanth was brave and sturdy and cunning, a survivor who knew how to look after others for long enough for them to become survivors too. "He knows what he's doing, and he's hidden beings from the Hutts before," Din said. Strill cocked her head. "There a spot for the Huntress there?" "Yes, and there are scouts too, Tuskens. Even Gorga will think twice before tangling with a band of raiders."
"Your Tuskens?" Paz asked.
Din shook his head. "Not the White Bantha," he said. "But a friendly enough tribe as far as Tuskens go. They're called the Sun Rock. They've allied with the people of Mos Pelgo." Paz and Strill traded another glance.
"We'll talk about it," Strill said after a moment.
"I dunno, Orvod. I like having these walls. That hut'd have to bring some pretty heavy ordnance down to make much of a dent. And there's the tunnels, right? Myrta found some. I like having a few ways out."
"So do I," Paz added.
"There are ways out of Mos Pelgo," Din assured them. He rolled his eyes a little. Of course the kids had found a few of the tunnels out of the palace. They had been exploring at night, after all. And that was something that foundlings were encouraged to look for. Tunnels, hiding spots, ways into and out of a covert. "It's..." He hesitated again, not sure that the Ahra and their network were Din's secrets to give up. Boba knew about the network, but Paz... "Mos Pelgo," Din said, settling on a handful of vague terms, "is not unfamiliar with moving beings around out of sight."
"What do you..." "Ah," said Paz, catching on. Freedom Network? Something like that. Plenty of bolt holes and hiding places, then, Paz said.
Din nodded. It's near some canyon land. There are routes in and out of the desert. You can make a break for Bastine if you have to. Bastine's big enough to get lost in.
We'll talk about it, Paz said, echoing Strill.
Just let me know if you want to move, Din said.
Or tell Ushib if you don't want to talk to me.
His heart twisted. Strill seemed fine enough with Din now. She'd determined that he wasn't a Wurek, that he wasn't a danger to the tribe, that he was helping. And Paz was... He'd stopped fighting. He'd said that he was through trying to kill Din, that his honor was satisfied.
But that doesn't mean they'll want me dropping in on them, Din thought. I'm not a Wurek, but I'm still an outsider.
Ushib will make sure that Fed or I hear about it, Din finished. Paz leaned in again, knocking his shoulder against Din's.
We'll tell you, he said. Ushib scares me.
Din relaxed a little, tension easing.
Good, he said. If you want to stay here, it's not really my place to offer you formal protection, but Boba can.
Would he consider it?
Paz asked, tone cutting.
Din shot him a glare.
He'd extend the offer to the Verdica and the Foundlings, at least, Din said. You, he might throw to the Anuba.
I don't rate a rancor.
He got rid of the rancor, said Din. But if you're so eager to jump into another fight you can't win, I'm sure we could dig something up in the desert. A blade back, maybe, to teach Paz a little bit about what it was like to get tackled off his feet.
Vode, Strill cut in, sounding much older all of a sudden. Long-suffering, the way that Annika would get when Din and Paz pushed her past her patience.
Focus. We'll talk about it, right, Paz? And decide what's best from there. This Mos Pelgo could be good to get out of the way, spend a few weeks in a quiet little village, getting our strength back.
Paz grunted. My strength back, you mean, he muttered. He gestured down at his bad leg. The rest of you are fine. Could be halfway across the galaxy by now.
Yeah, well, if you'd rest instead of getting into it with Orivod like a Rutmat Gundark, you'd probably be halfway across the galaxy too, Strill retorted. But here we are.
Din raised his eyebrows, surprised.
Is she always like this? He asked, signing carefully at Paz. He wanted to see how much Tusken sign Paz still remembered. Paz watched Din's hands, head cocked. Din imagined that Paz's brow was furrowed, then signed, fingers clumsy.
Yes.
Din chuckled, which made Strill tilt her helmet down like she was scowling at him.
She's got a point, though, Din pointed out, mostly to keep Strill on his side. He liked having her at his back.
You'll heal, Paz. You just have to rest.
Paz snorted deeply.
Like you're so good at that, he said.
Din's smile faded into a scowl.
Shut up, he said.
I popped my stitches two times.
And nearly bled to death in the mess hall, but sure, Dinika, you're a great example of resting when you're injured.
Kara Valkara, Strill muttered.
Paz stopped and coughed a little. Din resisted the urge to rub the back of his neck.
She is a bit like Annika, he thought, wry.
That wasn't a bad thing. Annika had always been the most level-headed of the three of them, Din and Annika and Paz.
The Allure must have thought so, too, if she'd named Annika her heir.
Paz needed someone like that around to keep him in check. Din didn't know Jag very well, but the boy was a teenaged Mandalorian. Keeping someone around with sense inside their bucket wasn't going to hurt Jag's chances of staying alive.
Din cleared his throat, trying and failing not to feel chastened by a warrior nearly half his age.
I can come check in a few days, Din said. He looked between Paz and Strill again. If you want to rest and talk it over, make sure the kids are good to travel.
Sounds good to me, Strill said, tilting her helmet at Paz.
Rusa?
The word was another that was unfamiliar to Din, but Paz seemed to understand it, because he heaved an enormous sigh and said,
Yeah, it's fine. Just don't come barging in here. The kids, they've never seen it. I don't know if they've seen someone who's Darmanda.
Din nodded. I can do that, he said. He didn't want to scare the foundlings. Knocking on the door wouldn't be the worst thing in the world, even though thinking of the foundlings made Din's skin itch. I want them somewhere safe now, he thought. He didn't know if Gorga was going to rally and strike again. His first raid had failed, so for a second attempt he might hire more competent mercs, or hire more. Boba's palace was well defended, but even defensible places could be overrun. The covert was proof of that. Just don't take too long, Din warned. We don't know when Gorga's gonna strike again, but we know that he will. He won't stop until he's made to stop. We'll talk it over, and I'll keep this one, Strill said, jerking a thumb at Paz. Off his feet. Promise. I'm not a child, Paz muttered, but didn't argue any further. Conversation at an end, and keen not to overstay his welcome, despite Paz's assurances, Din wasn't sure that it would be extended again. Din pushed up off his elbows and heaved himself, slowly, painfully, back to his feet. Standing hurt. Shifting to try to relieve the ache in his groin hurt worse. Din tried to hide his pain, hissing between his teeth, and carefully fit his helmet back over his head when he realized that he wasn't going to be able to hide his expressions. Paz kicks like a mudhorn, Din thought sourly. Paz had just as much trouble climbing to his feet, though, so Din supposed that they were even. The day's only just started, too, Din thought. He had promised to do a whole host of things for Boba and Fennec. Expression now safely hidden behind his helmet, Din let himself grimace. That was before I got into it with Paz. There was nothing for it, though. Their fight had already happened. Din was just gonna have to be sore for the rest of the day. That didn't stop him from stopping in the training room on his way out of the palace, though. He said his goodbyes to Paz and Strill, wonder and relief still strong in his chest, and then Din swiped some fresh Bacta and a few tabs of low-grade Samoxin from the training room. He ducked into another empty room, locked the door, and treated the worst of his hurts on his own. The Bacta kicked in faster than the Samoxin. Moving still hurt, but with his armor on, Din had some structure to protect himself from the worst effects of jostling around. If I can find an armorer who will forge for me, Din thought, smearing the last of his borrowed Bacta over the swollen skin around his testicles, wincing at the cold sensation that soothed and shocked Din at the same time. It might be time to invest in a codpiece. He didn't want to throw up anymore, though, which was good. Din snapped his armor back into place and got on with his day. This wouldn't be the first time he'd have to work a job after taking a beating. By the time Din made his way back through the palace and was studying the selection of speeders in the back landing bay, the Samoxin had started to work, too, and it took the sharpest edges off his pain. The Samoxin did not, unfortunately, bring his battered old bark back from where it had been wrecked on the sand road into Mos Eisley. 2 months ago, when all of this had started, Boba's collection of ships and speeders had been limited to his fire spray and whatever pre-Imperial scrap Jabba and Bib Fortuna hadn't bothered to trash or sell. Din's choices had been the bark or nothing at all. Now, speeders of every shape and size lined the landing pad. Some belonged to various palace guests and others to various palace employees, but Din knew that a fair few had either been gifts or had been bought by Fennec to make sure that the palace guards had something to patrol in. And Din, unofficially Boba's left hand, had his pick of the lot. I don't want my pick of the lot, Din thought, grumpy. Fennec had acquired a brace of Imperial-grade 74Zs, but Din didn't trust Imperial tech as far as he could throw it. There was one 614 AVA at the end of the row that looked like it was old enough to have survived the occupation of Lothal, but Din wasn't sure it would be better than the 74Zs. All of them were Imperial, and the Imperials had paid for fast and cheap manufacturing, not quality. Cark it, Din thought, ducking back inside. I'll fly myself out to the canyons. He returned to the landing pad a few minutes later, armed with a spare fuel canister for his jetpack, and then Din took to the skies. The Jundland Wastes were about half a day from the palace by speeder. The flight by jetpack took a little over an hour. The wind whipped around Din as he flew. It was sweet and cold at this height, which kept Din from cooking in his armor. The suns were high in the sky, bright and fierce. The desert below him shimmered in the heat. Not much down there was moving. Not even banthas wanted to be out in the suns during this time of day. Din kept a sharp eye out for snipers or idiots with grenade launchers, just in case. He didn't plan on getting hit the same way twice. He made it to the red edges of the Jundland Wastes without any trouble. The cliffs soared above the low desert, their shadows were dark and deep. The suns were fierce against Din's back as he made his descent. His Beskar whined as its internal temperature controls struggled to keep up. He would have preferred to come out here at dawn or dusk, to avoid the worst of the sun's fierce glare, the confusing haze that shimmered over the sands. But at least in daylight, any signs of Gorga the Hutt's mercenaries should be easy to read. Din doubted that the mercs, if they had staged their attack on the palace out of the canyons, had bothered to hide their tracks. They would have gone out expecting to either die or take the palace. They wouldn't have thought of doubling back around to cover up their tracks. Din circled the canyons a few times by air, searching for any obvious clues on the high plateau that the canyons had been carved from. In a perfect galaxy, Din would have seen a few abandoned transport ships. No one had survived the attack on the palace to come back and man any ships they might have used to make planetfall. He could have confirmed his theory, checked the ships for any information that might help Din figure out what Gorga was going to do next, then gone back home. Unfortunately, there were no abandoned ships on the plateau. That would have been too easy, Din thought sourly. He made a tighter loop of the plateau, dropping to skim 100 or so feet above the sun-baked rocks, adjusting his visor so that he could study them in detail. He found a few carbon burns scored here and there above the lip of one narrow winding canyon, but it was hard to tell how old they were. After a few days out in the heat and wind, all carbon burns tended to look the same. Din still dropped down to land and take a closer look. He kept his feet as he landed this time, wincing as the impact jarred his sore gut, and crouched to run the orange tips of his gloves over the long streaks of black char burned into the rock. Someone was up here, Din thought. His glove had come away black. He could tell that the carbon burns had been made by a ship, not a speeder or a blaster, because they were as thick around as Din's torso. Not even pod racers or other heavily modded speeders left scores that big. If it was the mercs, they probably made planetfall and hunter-killers. Heavy freighters or troop transports would be too big, too noticeable, but smaller ships were almost invisible on a planet like Tatooine. We get so many smugglers here, anything smaller than a Barlow's class is so common no one looks twice at it, Din thought. Tatooine's business had never been exactly Republic-sanctioned, even during the days of the Old Republic. Even the Empire hadn't been able to rein in Tatooine's legions of smugglers and mercenaries. Gorga's people would have wanted to blend in. That was just good sense when attacking a fortified location. The palace wasn't going to be taken down by anything short of a full-scale invasion or a bombing from Atmo. A band of 20 or so odd mercs would have wanted to try sneaking in first to maximize their chances of success. They did manage to sneak in, Din thought. They caught us by surprise. If stealth had been the mercs' game, they would have made planetfall in the kind of ship that was as common as a Kirik fly. G9 riggers, Omicron-class shuttles, maybe a Corellian light freighter or two. Din prowled from the carbon burns towards the lip of the canyon, balancing carefully on the edge and looking down. Vertigo twisted in his stomach for a moment, probably made worse by the number of times Paz had hit Din in the head, but Din locked his knees and managed to stay upright. Not a bad spot to get into the canyons, he thought. This particular canyon was narrower than some of the others that had been carved through the Jundland Wastes. Some canyons were wide enough to hold a herd of bantha walking side by side. Others were so narrow that only a child could slip through. This particular cut was somewhere in between the two. Not wide enough for a bantha, but wide enough for a speeder bike, maybe two if the bikes were narrow. Tuscans wouldn't venture down a canyon like this unless there was water along its path or unless they were hunting something specific. Something on the rim of the canyon caught Din's eye. He leaned in, bracing his knees so he didn't tip forward and fall boyish over boots, and took a closer look. A piton. A small metal spike, maybe 4 or 5 inches long, was embedded into the rock face of the canyon, a handspan down from the edge. The piton wasn't made of Beskar or bronzium or anything special. It looked like smuggler's iron, if Din was being honest. Dark and roughly shaped and a little rusted. The sort of thing almost anyone could shape using a hunk of ore and a decently hot flame. But it didn't end up here by accident. Tuscans entered the canyons on foot, following their bantha herds. Even hunting Tuscans wouldn't deface the Jundland canyons by carving out or bolting in their own handholds. If a canyon wall had to be climbed, it was climbed by hand. Anyone who fell were deemed unworthy of the canyons in the first place.
Most Tatooinians aren't that stupid, either.
Most settlers stayed out of the Jundland wastes. There was a lot to fear here. Canyon crates and raiding parties, mad old sorcerers hiding in caves.
Smugglers, Din thought.
He got down on his knees, making sure that most of his body was supported by the plateau, and reached down to tug at the piton experimentally. It didn't budge. That could be because it had been anchored into the rock for a while, or it could be because this was an established route in and out of the canyons, and whoever had bolted it to the cliff had wanted to make sure that it would stay bolted.
If there's one, Din thought, leaning over farther.
Sure enough, there was another piton bolted into the canyon wall about a foot below the first, and then another a foot below that, and another, and another.
I wonder how far I am from where I found Jalto.
This could just be a smuggler's track. Going through the Jundland Canyons was risky, but it cut out several days of travel through the Great Din Sea. A particularly brave smuggler, or a particularly well-armed one, could make it through.
Or, Din thought, bracing himself on his elbows, this is where the mercs came down.
Only one way to find out, Din thought. He didn't want to take his jetpack down into the bottom of the canyon, since the noise would echo and amplify off the walls. So Din fished his grappling hook out of its coil underneath his gauntlet, anchored one end to a sturdy-looking rock on top of the plateau, and began to pick his way down the wavering line of pitons down towards the canyon floor. Din tested each one as he went. Most of them were pretty sturdy and only complained a little at his weight. A few wobbled, driven into natural faults in the wall or set in at odd angles, but most of them had been placed by someone who'd known what they were doing. Din made it down to the solid floor of the canyon and then looked up. The shadows were deeper down here, marking the shift from morning to afternoon. It would be dark soon. The sun set quickly in the canyon lands.
I'll need to work fast, then.
Din didn't want to be down in the canyons after dark.
Somebody is using the canyons to move something, he thought. That much was obvious. But is it ordinary smugglers, or is it Gorga's mercs?
Either way, Din didn't want to be surprised by anyone down here. He was reasonably sure he could talk his way out of trouble if he ran into a Tuscan hunting band. Ashak had first met Din in the canyons, after all, and had let Din go without a fuss. But smugglers were easily spooked, and Gorga's people had tried to kill Din twice already. Din looked left and right. The palace lay to the southeast of the Jundlands. If the pitons had been set by mercs, they wouldn't have gone deeper into the canyons, wouldn't have ventured north and west. Din turned to his right and began to pad down the canyon's winding path, searching for more signs and tracks. He was glad now that he'd brought his jetpack instead of a speeder or the Fly. The Fly was a sleek, light, and fast ship, but she was still a ship. Din would have had to leave her up on the plateau, and that might have drawn eyes. A speeder probably would have been fine, but Din's jetpack was faster and quieter than a speeder. Safer, insomuch as Din could be safe poking around in the Jundland wastes. He didn't want to use it unless he had to, since it would raise a racket, but if he needed to make a quick getaway, the jetpack would let him. When Jalto had come through the canyons, he'd left carbon scores on the walls to help himself navigate. Whoever had come this way hadn't bothered. Din couldn't pick out any signs on the walls, any arrows or notches or symbols that might show a path through the canyons.
So either whoever came this way knows the canyons well, he thought, which was a point underneath the smuggler theory, or they had some kind of navigational device.
There were maps of the Jundland Canyons out there. Boba had had one when he'd sent Din after Jalto. They weren't common, or even especially reliable, but they did exist.
And everyone knows where the palace is.
Din turned his auditory sensors up to their highest setting. He kept his visor on normal vision, since the heat coming in from the suns at the top of the canyons would mess up his thermal readings anyway, and kept going. Here and there, a gnarled cedar tree clawed its way out of the canyon walls, reaching for the suns. Roots twisted over the canyon floor. Junda birds whistled overhead. The first sign Din found, half a click away from the Python ladder leading up to the plateau, came from one of the cedar trees. One of its roots, thick around his bantha's leg and spanning the width of the canyon, had been cut. No Tuscan would cut a living cedar tree. Tuscan chieftains made their gadarfi from the wood of cedar trees, but only after a tree had died. Cutting into a living tree was a crime punishable by a mirroring wound. Cutting a root like this would cost a Tuscan a leg. Din crouched down to get a closer look. Made with a vibroknife, Din thought. The root had been cut twice, once at the edge of the left wall and once again at the edge of the right. 4 or 5 feet of root had been cut out and tossed aside. The edges of the cuts were dark and charred, sticky with fresh sap. So, definitely not Tuscans. And whoever did this recently. The section of the route that had been cut away to clear the canyon floor didn't give up any more clues. Din checked it over just to make sure, but couldn't find anything. He chewed his cheek for a moment, straightening up to look down the canyon trail. A smuggler might have done this to get some kind of cargo through, he thought, trying to order his thoughts. He didn't want to jump to conclusions or to try and make moisture out of a mirage. But most smugglers do what they can to avoid offending the Tuscans. Maiming a cedar tree was serious. But if it was Gorga's mercs... Din didn't have enough information to make a decision about who'd cut the root one way or another, so he filed the information away in his head and kept moving. He thought that mercenaries were more likely to cut or kill cedar trees, but even Tatooinean smugglers were known to make a stupid decision from time to time. The canyon widened as it went. By the time Din had gone a full click from the pitons, the canyon had grown wide enough to accommodate 2 or 3 adult banthas walking side by side, and there were more signs that someone had been through within the last few days. More trees and roots had been cut and cleared. A young canyon crate, just grown into its horns and its legs, had been killed and left to rot on the side of the path. It had only been dead for a few days. Corpses rotted quickly in the desert, and this one still had meat on its bones. And Din had finally found more carbon. At some point, whoever had come through here, at least 4 separate beings, judging by the different boot patterns Din had been able to read in trampled roots and piles of sand, but probably more, had found speeders. There was spilled fuel all over the canyon. Din picked up his pace. A crate called from some other canyon, high and haunting. The path branched, opening up into narrow foot tracks and wide canyon roads. A bantha had been killed, too. It had barely started to rot. Din found an empty canteen off to one side, following one of the wider roads. He checked the label. The canteen had been made on Narshada. Din's focus sharpened. His various aches and pains, starting to complain again after all of his climbing and flying, faded again. A lot of things are made on Narshada, Din reminded himself. Not everyone who passed through that moon was a hut merc or a hut smuggler. Din had made plenty of trips to Narshada over the years, and he'd never been formally aligned with the huts. But it is a coincidence. The Hut Council was based on Nal Hutta. Narshada was Nal Hutta's moon. It would be much easier for someone like Gorga, both lazy and fending off infighting from the council, to make a trip to Narshada and hire some mercs than it would be to come all the way out to Tatooine. A clearer image of the beings who'd followed this canyon before Din was starting to resolve, like a holo projection coming into focus. Professional, Din thought, because the pitons had been set by someone who'd known what they were doing. Fast, because they didn't stop to butcher the crate or the bantha. Not local, because locals know better than to cut down cedar trees. And not worried about conserving water. Either whoever came this way has plenty of water to spare, meaning that they're rich, or not planning on staying long enough to need more water. Or, he thought, thinking of the pool underneath the palace, of the aquifer that Jabba had ruled over for generations, the same water Boba now ruled for all of Mos Eisley. They knew there'd be water waiting for them at the end of the road. Din kept following the canyon, moving at a brisk lope. He rounded a bend and found another abandoned canteen, a second bend and found an empty blaster charge pack, another bend and... Din stopped, blinked. I know that tree. Din was standing in front of the cedar tree that Jalto the Zygerian had hit with his speeder. Jalto's speeder was still there. The front half of it was embedded into the trunk. Sap had congealed all around it. The tree was still alive, Din thought. It had lost a few of its lower boughs, but its needles were still green. Slowly, Din turned in a full circle, taking in everything he could see. The canyons branched off in half a dozen directions. One branch led to the Dune Sea and to the palace. Din had taken that path when he'd caught Jalto. The others. Din switched his visor over to a finer setting, scanning the sands around the base of Jalto's tree. Din had been following four or five beings from where he'd found the pitons on the plateau. There were 20 or more distinct boot prints in the sand now. Din, instincts prickling, went 20 or 30 feet down one of the other branching canyons. Sure enough, he found 5 sets of boot prints down that path. He checked another branch just to confirm his hunch and found the same. All of the prints led to the cedar tree Jalto had crashed into. This was a rallying point, Din realized. 20 mercs hadn't landed up on the plateau where Din had found the carbon and the pitons. But 5 had. And 5 had landed somewhere else, and 5 more in a third spot. Din didn't bother checking the other branching canyons. He knew what he'd find. That was how Gorgas people got in without any of our scouts seeing them, he thought. The mercs had flown in small groups, probably in battered freighters or hunter-killers, just like any other small-time smuggling operation. And while they'd almost certainly been seen by scouts or moisture farmers or even Tuscan bands, traveling like that, the mercs hadn't been noticed. No one had reported in to the palace because no one had seen anything worth reporting. They must know the canyons pretty well. If Gorga had worked with Bib Fortuna, that made sense. Bib Fortuna was, by all accounts, an idiot, but he'd been on Tatooine for years. Long enough to either learn how to get through the Jundlan Wastes on his own or pay someone to map it for him. So the mercs gathered here, Din thought. They had speeders waiting for them. That means they've got a local connection somewhere. Boba had said that he and Fennec had chased all of Gorga's people out of Mos Eisley, but the next closest city was Mos Espa, and it was 2 or 3 days out by speeder. Mos Eisley was the only city close enough to get speeders out to the canyons. Anchorhead was hardly a city, and was at least a day's ride by speeder. Bestine was north and even farther. Someone in the city is still helping Gorga, Din thought, putting the pieces together quickly. He knew that this could technically still be the signs of a smuggling operation, but it's not half as likely, he thought. Smugglers, the whole point of smuggling was to be as unobtrusive as possible. Bold smugglers didn't tend to last very long. All of this, making noise in the canyons, running the risk of angering the Tuscans, moving a large band of beings through the sands without bothering to cover their tracks, didn't read like smuggler tactics. But the mercs only had to surprise us. Only Boba and Fennec and Din, only the palace guards. Tuscans didn't use comlinks. Any raiders who'd seen the mercs come through the canyons might have wanted to warn the palace, and talking drums worked quickly enough. But not when racing against a band of mercs on speeder bikes. Din took another sweeping look over the canyon. There weren't any other signs that jumped out to him aside from the now months-old marks Jalto had left in the canyon walls. A thought occurred to Din. He'd had it with Fennec in the infirmary, which was why he'd thought to check the Jundlan Wastes in the first place. That thought was stronger now. Jalto was looking for one of these rally points, Din thought. Jalto hadn't been trying to get to Mos Espa, to a spaceport. He'd been trying to find a way up to the plateau, where Gorga's people could pick him up. We'll have to get eyes out here, Din thought. The spotted Anuba, or one of the friendly tribes, maybe. If we know where Gorga puts his people on the ground. A sensor, or 6 at least. Some kind of warning system, so the palace didn't get surprised again. And I need to find out who in Mos Eisley is helping Gorga move his mercs around out here. If Din could find out who was coordinating for Gorga on planet, he could blind Gorga at least for a little while, until Gorga found someone else to pay off or intimidate into helping. The thrill of the hunt began to thunder in Din's blood. It was cold and clear and cool, like the moons of Tatooine over a sand dune, like the feeling of flying. Mos Eisley, then, he thought. Din didn't bother following the tracks out of the Jundlan Wastes and into the Dune Sea. He knew where they were headed. He didn't bother trying to climb up out of the canyons, either. Din just took 2 long steps and boosted himself up with his jetpack, rising swiftly past the banded rocks and clearing the plateau in seconds. Din circled again just to make sure there were no threats on the plateau that he could see, then swung south and made straight for Mos Eisley. The palace came and went. Din had to stop and refuel in the desert, tucking his empty canister against his belt, taking another Cymoxin tab to keep himself sharp and moving, and kept flying. A hunter's cold focus burned in his veins. He made it to Mos Eisley just as the suns were beginning to set, the promise of evening hanging in the air above the city. He circled the city a few times too, broad sweeping loops, dodging shuttles as they descended and ships as they rose towards the black. Mos Eisley didn't have spaceport domes like Mos Entha did, so no one got on Din's internal comm system to tell him to land. No one shot at him either. Everyone below knew that there was only one Mandalorian in silver armor around, and they knew what the price of shooting him out of the sky would be. Din didn't see anyone in the streets below take one look at him and break for cover, so he figured that he was going to have to go about hunting down Gorg's contact the old-fashioned way, and made to land. He touched down in the business district. Boba kept a few guards out here to keep an eye on Mos Eisley and its mood. Din found one, a lean human man named Colburn, and checked in. He figured that somebody should probably know what Din was doing. "Palace is still standing," Colburn reported lazily. He was a cool, steady sort. He reminded Din of Vanth a little. Colburn had the same slow Tatooine drawl and the same sort of unfloppable energy, steady as a cedar tree and just as weathered. "Shan's having us check in every quarter hour. Last one was only a few minutes ago. Nobody's seen anything odd moving around." "Shan's back to work?" Din asked, frowning. Fennec needed to rest. "From the infirmary, sounds like," Colburn offered, though he was smiling a little. "I'm not going to tell her to take a day off." Din snorted. That was fair. "How long are you on shift?" Din asked. Colburn looked Din up and down, some of his lazy calm fading. "Long as you need, boss," he said. "Me and the rest'll keep our eyes peeled for you. You hunting huts?" Din nodded. "Yeah," said Colburn. "As long as you need. You get in trouble, put up a flare or something. Big boss doubled the patrol. There's one of us every half click through the city." "Good to know," Din murmured. "Gorga's contacts, if he has any, will probably be in the gleaning. Maybe the quarter. Can you have some extra bodies sent that way just in case?" Colburn nodded. "Good luck," he said. Din inclined his head, feeling a little better about his chances. It was good to have backup, even if that backup was a handful of palace guards. He turned down Mos Eisley's main road and started prowling. The streets of Mos Eisley were even quieter than the canyons of the Jundland Wastes. It set Din's teeth on edge. "This is wrong," all of his instincts murmured. "Something's not right." Din scanned the streets quickly, searching for any threats. The city was as subdued as Din had ever seen it. It was even quieter than it had been when Din had come with Fennec and Boba and taken the smuggler's walk. There were a handful of Jawas selling their wares on a few street corners, but they had no customers. Most of the cantina doors were closed. The palace was attacked. They could probably see it from here. Mos Eisley's people would have seen the ships attacking the palace, at least. The light crews are up in the sky. They probably think they're about to get invaded. Mos Eisley was so close to Jabba's palace that anyone who took the palace took the city by default. Mos Eisley's caution made sense. Boba's guards were in the streets. Ships had attacked the palace. Din would be on edge, too, if his life and livelihood depended on whoever ruled from the palace's throne room. The city's unnatural quiet still set his nerves on edge, though, as he made his way through the streets. The Jundland Wastes were supposed to be quiet. No one lived there. The land was sacred. But Mos Eisley... Din's neck prickled. He felt eyes on him. None that were openly hostile. Din was pretty sure that he wasn't about to get tackled or shot in the back, but the attention still made him grit his teeth. With the city paralyzed like this, there wasn't even a way for Din to try and blend into a crowd. He was the only sentient moving in the streets, aside from the Jawas. A few others, who were either brave enough or drunk enough to want to see what was going on, stuck their heads out of the safety of their homes and cantinas. But none of them ventured into Din's path. Din was visible, exposed. Din lifted his chin, straightened his shoulders, and made his way along the smuggler's walk, starting in Mos Eisley's business district. He didn't falter. He'd done this before. "But then I had Fennec and Boba with me," Din thought. "Now I'm on my own." Most of Mos Eisley's people wouldn't attack him. He knew that. Not out of any honest affection for Din, of course. Din doubted that there was any affection for him in Mos Eisley, really, aside from Pelimoto and maybe some of the beings living in the Quarter who'd heard from Vanth that Din was a friend of the Network. But at least out of fear of Boba. Mos Eisley knew who Din worked for. They knew what would come down on them if they tried to take Din out. That sense of protection bolstered Din some. He kept his head up, his pace smooth and prowling and unhurried, as he made his way through the business district. He sank as deeply as he could into the cold, clear mindset of the Baroya. He was on a job. The safety of his... not his tribe, but the people who he'd come to care for as he cared for his own people, was at stake. The gleaning came up on him quickly. Boba's presence was visible even here. The street corners were still piled with garbage and scrap, big, lazy Keurig flies buzzing in the heat, but most of the largest piles of refuse had been cleared away, and the streets branching off Mos Eisley's main road into the gleaning had much clearer lines of sight.
Boba said something about that, Din remembered. He said that Jabba had run most of the city's municipal departments, too, not just its criminal ones.
That made Din smile under his helmet. He liked the idea of Boba cleaning Mos Eisley up a little bit, making it a better, or at least a safer, place to live. It seemed like an odd thing for a crime lord to do, but it was something an lord would be concerned with.
Din followed the smuggler's walk until he reached a street he recognized, then turned down it and into the gleaning proper. Clearing away some of the heaps of garbage had also cleared Din's lines of sight, which he appreciated. Din was still tense, every sense on high alert, his auditory sensors turned up, but he wasn't convinced he'd be shot from any scrap of cover. Bubisca and other hut operations, cantinas, brothels, chop shops, smuggler's dens, had always thrived here. The business district had been quiet and still. The gleaning was definitely more subdued than it would usually be at evening time, but it wasn't quite as paralyzed. Music thumped from behind cantina doors, lights shone through gaps in windows. Beings were moving through the district, some dressed for a night of partying, some dressed for work. Most of them gave Din a long, assessing look and then pointedly looked away. Their message was clear. We'll stay out of your way. The gleaning's residents would leave Din alone, presumably as long as he didn't make too much of a mess with his work. Din briefly entertained the thought of stopping a few of the beings walking around. Some were smugglers or spacers by their dress, and one tall Rhodian woman was clearly some kind of cantina owner, but kept to himself for now.
Bubisca first, he thought.
Boba asked Din to check out Bubisca specifically. Din would start there. If he didn't find anything, fresh track, some kind of clue, he could revisit the idea of interrogating passersby. When Din found Bubisca, the cantina was in even worse shape than it had been when Din had found Boba here interrogating its owner. The walls were still mud and wattle, yellow with age, but the corrugated durasteel that had protected the windows was all gone, stripped away, and the darkness inside the cantina looked out into the street. Boba had not fixed the door when he'd left, and there was a heap of trash piled by the entrance. Din did finally switch his visor over to thermal imaging, scanning the building for any heat signatures. He saw a few womp rats lurking near the back of the cantina, but nothing else big enough to worry about. Satisfied that he wasn't about to get shot, Din drew his blaster and stepped inside. He switched back over to his normal view field and looked around. When they'd come here hut hunting, Fennec and Boba had done a number on the place. Din was sure that Bubisca hadn't ever been neat or tidy, but whatever Boba and Fennec had done had left most of the furniture in splinters. Broken glass littered the floor. The bodies had been dragged out, though, and it didn't look like anything other than womp rats had moved in. Din made a slow circuit of the cantina's main room, searching for signs that someone, anyone, had been in Bubisca recently. The bar had been thoroughly raided. The mugs and glasses had all been broken, and anything consumable carried off. There weren't any signs that anyone was squatting here, though, or using the cantina as a drop spot or fighting ring. Din prowled deeper into the building, his hand on his blaster. He hadn't ventured through the back of the cantina the first time he'd been here. There were bloodstains on the floor, the walls. There was a small office, though it, too, had been looted, stripped of anything that might have had even a little value. Din stepped over a shattered datapad and studied the room for a second, then moved on.
Unfortunately, the rest of Bubiska was just as empty as the front and the office. It wasn't like the canyons, where Din had found more signs the farther he'd pushed. There was nothing in the cantina to indicate that anyone had been inside of it for more than a few minutes at a time since Boba and Fennec had trashed the place. Din did his due diligence anyway. He checked every room, nook, and cranny. Unlike the hut cantina in Mos Entha, this one had no tunnel or secret room that Din could find. Its back door opened into a narrow alley. One end of the alley was made impassable by a heap of sand and refuse, so Din went the other way, switching his visor over to check for prints. There were more prints in the alley than there'd been in the cantina itself, but none of them were hut trails, so Din couldn't say who'd been in the alley because they'd been working for Gorga the Hut and who'd just been passing through. Kark, he growled under his breath, frustrated. He felt like a Masif that had lost a scurrier's scent. Bounty hunting was pretty straightforward. Usually Din had a fob or at least a description to work with. He had a name, and sometimes, if he was lucky, he even had things like a last place of employment, a favorite cantina, the names of a target's family or friends. Hunting like this, hunting shadows, was harder. Din didn't know who he was looking for, not yet. Running down information was harder than running down a body. Din wasn't ready to go back to the palace empty-handed quite yet, though. He came out of the alley and found himself on another street, this one smaller and running parallel to the main street that cut through the gleaning. I know what signs and symbols the Hut cartel uses, at least, Din thought. He knew how the Huts marked safe houses and spice dens. There had to be more than just one Hut-run operation in Mos Eisley, even if Boba and Fennec were pruning them away regularly. Maybe I can find another Hut cantina and make some noise, Din thought. He set off down the street, looking for the spiky symbol of the cartel or any of the half-dozen signs they'd used. Stylized curls of smoke for spice dens, rough constellations for smugglers' hideouts, images of Twi'lek-dancing girls to mark brothels. As Din moved deeper into the gleaning, dodging flies and scraps of metal, the noise of the city picked up. He passed two droid-fighting rings, a Rillish tea house, a chop shop, a makeshift pod-racing track. He checked each establishment for any obvious ties to the Huts, but couldn't find any. He pushed on. The suns had fully set now, and the lights of Mos Eisley shifted to neon blue and green and orange. One street Din turned down was entirely lined by nightclubs, another had a different fighting ring in every building. But none of them, Din thought, are Hut operations. He didn't know how many of the businesses going on down here were paying a tax to Boba for his protection, so Din didn't want to stick his helmet in without being sure that a place had ties to the Huts. Boba needed Mos Eisley on his side. Starting unnecessary bar fights or harassing the pit fighters who'd already paid Boba protection money would only cause problems. Everyone knew who he was. Din felt their eyes on him, their attention. Everyone was watching him to see what he would do. I'm being followed, too. Not followed so closely that Din was worried about ending up with a knife in his back, but he was being tailed. He let his followers stick close for now. Din still had his jetpack, he could lose them if he had to. There were plenty of things to catch Din's attention, though nothing that seemed connected to the Huts. The business district had been deathly quiet, but the gleaning was raucous and loud. The night markets had cropped up, tents and stalls full of speeder parts and food and drinks and bits and baubles. Other smaller gangs sold glitter stem on street corners, ran dice games, street side tobacco, but none of them used Hut signs. A few had even painted mythosaurs on the walls behind them. Boba's sign? To mark that these small-time gangsters were under Boba's protection, maybe, operating with his blessing? Din had gone over what felt like half the gleaning by the time he found something he recognized. Painted on a wattle brick at the mouth of an alley were two crossed clubs, one upright facing the sky and the other pointing towards the earth. Din hadn't been in Hut territory for years, but in the old days that had marked a pit-fighting ring. Jabba had loved them and had been known to patronize many, especially the pit-fights that ended in bloodshed. Maybe Bib Fortuna loved them too, Din thought. He didn't have any other leads. The paint on the wall was old enough to have been there since Jabba's days, but maybe the ring was still around. Maybe there were clues to find, names written down somewhere, something Din could use. Hands still on his blaster, Din looked around, checking either side of the alley, then padded between the two mud and wattle buildings. a butcher shop and a tannery, judging by the smell, and made his way into the alley. It was a narrow fit. Din's shoulders didn't quite brush the sides of it, but it was a close thing. It had been used as a path to a pit fight, though. Din saw more graffiti. The names of individual pit fighters, rude commentary, more sketches of various inaccurate anatomies. There was a door near the opposite end of the alley. It looked like it hadn't been opened in years, the durasteel half-rusted to the wattle wall, but there was a plate above the door that had a name written on it in Huttese. Din stepped over a pile of scrap metal, tilting his head back to try and read the name above the door, searching for other clues. The hairs on the back of his neck lifted. His stomach dropped. Something behind him rustled. Din tried to turn, drawing his blaster, but someone was already there. A hand smacked his blaster aside, and Din lost his grip on it. It clattered to the ground, and then his attacker was on him. Something thin but strong closed around Din's throat, tight as a band of Beskar, and pulled. Din choked on a shout. He fought it instinctively, shoving a hand up, getting three fingers between his kuta and whatever had snared him. It dug into his fingers, bit his gloves. Wire garrote, Din thought. Someone was behind him, pulling hard. They were strong. But Din had two hands. He kept the one he'd thrown up to catch the garrote where it was, pushing away from his body with all his strength. The muscles in his arm and shoulder screamed. With his other hand, Din went for the darksaber. He didn't need to draw it to use it. He just needed to reach the ignition switch and aim. The darksaber snapped to life, punched a hole in Din's cloak, and found something to sink into. Whoever had grabbed Din screamed. The smell of burning flesh and hair filled the alley. Right arm shrieking in protest, muscles so tight they felt like they were seizing, Din shoved out, tearing the garrote out of his attacker's hands. Now free, Din leapt away, spun around, and slashed downwards with the darksaber in a cross-body blow he'd seen Master Dooku demonstrate in the holocron. His attacker, Oweekwe, half a dozen golden piercings glittering in his cheek spikes, hit the ground in two pieces. He was dead. Din's first blow had caught him in the abdomen, burning a hole straight through him. The second strike had caught the weak way high on one shoulder and cut diagonally to the bottom of his ribcage. Din rubbed his throat, pulse pounding. He could feel a faint divot cut in the material of his kuta, and his fingers throbbed, his entire right arm alight with pain, but... "Mr. Mandalorian?" a familiar voice called. Din spun back around, the darksaber still lit in his hand. Geeta flinched back. She'd come from the street. One of her hands had been outstretched and had fallen away when the darksaber's harsh light fell over her. She was ashen underneath her orange skin, so pale that her curling Leku tattoos were almost invisible. A second Twi'lek hung back at the edge of the alley, watching Din with wide eyes. The defensive curl of Gita's shoulders made Din come back to himself a little, guilt gnawing through the sharp, immediate haze of survival. "I scared her." "Sorry," said Din gruffly, and deactivated the darksaber, hooking it back into his belt. He towed the Skug who tried to jump him and resisted the urge to rub at his throat again. His kuta had held up. He was alive. Din flexed his bad hand instead, trying to move the pain around a little, to get it to something he could focus on instead of be distracted by. "Today," he thought, "has just not been my day." At least the Weequay hadn't kicked him in the balls. The galaxy was made up of small mercies. "No, it's okay," Geeta said, straightening up. She shook her head a little, Leku swaying. Some of her normal color returned, as did her usual expression of cool disinterest. "Are you okay? That was..." She trailed off. "I'm fine," Din said. He nudged half of the dead Weequay again, harder. The corpse was smoking. Din bent and collected his blaster from where it had fallen, tucking it back into its holster, then turned his attention back to Geeta. "What are you doing down here?" Geeta asked. She looked between Din and the body. "It's not safe to be down here in the gleaning at night." "I'm fine," Din repeated. He paused, looked harder at Geeta and her companion. The other Twi'lek was female, young, probably near Gita's age. They could have been sisters, almost, except the second Twi'lek was smaller and slimmer, her skin a rich, deep shade of purple instead of Gita's orange. The tattoos on her leku were different, too. Gita's tattoos were fashioned as a series of intricate stripes spanning from the crown of her head to the narrow ends of her leku. Each stripe was filled in with smaller curling patterns that reminded Din of flowers or vines. The other Twi'lek's tattoos were a series of starburst shapes, clustered thickly together at the crown of her head and spreading out as they marched down her leku. She was wearing different clothes, too. Gita was wearing something that Nora would wear, loose, billowing pants, a simple but well-made shirt with sleeves that covered most of Gita's arms but left part of her midriff bare, a gauzy scarf to keep off the worst of the wind and sand. She looked comfortable. Not half as stiff as she was in the palace, even though Gita was all smiles when she was working behind the bar. The other Twi'lek was dressed in a dancer's outfit, which was to say that she was hardly wearing anything at all. She had the same starburst tattoos on her shoulders, too, down her arms, her flanks. She was shivering a little in the cooling evening air. Din resisted the urge to offer her his still-smoking cloak. It had so many holes in it now that it was hardly better than the girl's outfit. "What are you doing down here?" Din asked, looking between Gita and her companion. "I've got Bhaskar. I'm safe enough. You're..." Din paused. He didn't want to put Gita's back up. She'd always been prickly and defensive around him. He didn't want to say, "You're in more danger than I am." Gita knew that. Gita sighed. "I know it's not safe," she muttered. One of her leku twitched towards the other Twi'lek. "This is Ruli. I'm walking her home. She works at Sandscales." Din looked the other Twi'lek, Ruli, up and down. Sandscales was probably a cantina or a club, if he had to guess. If Ruli worked here in the gleaning, it probably wasn't one of the upscale ones. Din softened. Gita was walking her friend home to make sure that nothing happened to her. "It's still not safe," he said. Gita touched her forehead, where a faint, deeper shade of orange marked a healing bruise. "The bombing," Din thought. "It's never safe," said Gita. "But it's only a few blocks home from here, and it's more dangerous to walk alone." "Ruli," she added, turning to the other girl, "this is the guy I was telling you about, the one who saved my life." Gita did look better than she had when Din had seen her last. The cut on her forehead was healing nicely, and her bruises had faded to faint discoloration. Her eyes were clear. She was even speaking basic again. "I can't blame her for wanting to make sure that her friend gets home safe." Boba had banned slavery, but Twi'lek dancing girls still fetched a high price along the Sourlands. Ruli was pretty, Din supposed. Maybe even beautiful when she didn't look so afraid or so wary. Gita was the same. "You're the Mandalorian?" Ruli asked. She still hadn't stepped into the alley, though Din couldn't blame her for that either. "I'm Din," Din said. He saw Gita blink out of the corner of his eye. She'd probably never heard Din's name before. "You're the one who saved Gita's life?" Ruli pressed. Din inclined his head. "Sort of," he allowed. "Boba's medic did the saving. I just made sure that neither of us blew up." Ruli's eyes went as round as black melons. "Wow," she said, her voice going a little breathy. Din eyed her, revising his opinion of her age. Gita was... If Gita and Ruli were nearly the same age, they were as different as the suns and the moons. Gita was reserved, guarded. She'd warmed up to Din a little since she'd met him, but she was still uneasy in Din's presence. Ruli heard that Din had saved Gita's life and visibly relaxed. Her tense shoulders dropped and her leku stopped quivering. "I'd rather her think of me as a friend than an enemy, though," Din reasoned. Gita just rolled her eyes. "Come on, Ruli, you've seen a Mandalorian before, you've been to the palace." "That's Lord Fett, though," Ruli said, shuddering. "He's different. This is the one who saved you. And he's Bachan, everyone says so." "Helped," Din repeated, then caught what Ruli had said, Bachan, and startled. He took a closer look at the girl. Is she still a slave? If she was, Din could... Well, he wasn't sure what he could do, but Boba had outlawed it in his territory, and Mos Eisley was his territory. Ruli could... Gita rolled her eyes again, cutting off Din's train of thought. "Word's out about that," she told Din. "Came in through one of the freedom runners in town. What'd you do to get in, Bachan?" "I don't think I can tell you," said Din. He grimaced underneath his helmet. Is Gita part of the network? He'd never thought to ask himself that before. If she was, it made him feel a little better about the idea of her wandering around Mos Eisley without someone from the palace with her. Gita nodded like she understood anyway. A freedom runner in town, Din thought. Pure Windrunner? Whisperwork, Gita said. Something like that. Gita studied Din speculatively. That's good, she finally said. The tips of her Laku twitched again. She looked down at the dead Weequay. Think there are more of him where he came from? That's what I'm in town figuring out, Din admitted. Oh, said Gita. She exchanged a glance with Ruli, then nodded, apparently coming to a decision. Tell me about it while you're walking us home. Din raised an eyebrow underneath his helmet. Am I walking you home? As soon as he'd seen Gita and Ruli behind her, he'd known that he was going to make sure they got home all right, but... But Gita's never liked having me around, he thought. Din had supposed that he'd planned to follow Gita from a distance. He hadn't expected her to ask, or to tell him, really, to walk her home. Gita looked at Din. A faint smile was playing around the corners of her mouth, for once. Maybe almost getting blown up beside Din had convinced Gita that Din meant her no harm. Maybe she was afraid of me, Din thought, thinking about how Ruli had shuddered when she'd said Boba's name, how hard Gita had tried to keep Boba from finding out that Gita was being followed home. She's afraid of Boba, and I look like Boba, so she's been afraid of me, too. But now she knows I'm Bachan. Din could accept that. He sighed. Fine, he muttered. I'll take you home. I'm not making much headway here, either. He did stop to check the Weequay's body, searching for anything that might connect the Weequay to Gorga. Din came up empty. The Weequay had been carrying a few dented pegats in his pockets, had a knife, but nothing else. No puck, no hut sigils or tattoos. For all Din knew, the Weequay'd seen Din go poking around in an alley and had just decided to go for him. Din was sure that Gorga'd put a bounty on Din by now. Rough night? Gita asked. Din grunted. I've had better, he said. What are you looking for? Gita ushered Ruli out of the way, then led Din back out onto the street, setting off in the direction of the quarter. Din followed. Ruli kept looking at him out of the corner of her eyes, eyes wide. Din hesitated, but the huts had nearly killed Gita, too. She was no more their friend than Fennec was. Hut contacts, Din said. Or, you know the palace was attacked. Gita shuddered. Din picked up his pace a little, so he was walking beside her, and he saw her face twist in grief. I know, she said. I went to... When I heard that the palace was attacked, I went to help, to see who was hurt. Zero. She broke off, looking sharply away. Her voice was thick with grief. Zero brought you home a few times, Din murmured, remembering. Nora had put Cacique and Zero on the job first. She'd only pulled Din in when the others hadn't been able to find evidence that Gita had been followed. Gita nodded. And he used to look out for me, she tried to explain. During Master Fortuna's days, he tried to make sure that nobody gave us dancing girls too hard of a time. He was nice. Weird, but nice. I'm sorry for your loss, Din said. He wasn't sure what else he could say. He had never been a guest, or worse, of Bib Fortuna's court. He didn't know what Gita had gone through there, what she'd done to survive. Gita shrugged one shoulder, trying to appear cool and aloof, but her face was still twisted with grief. This is Tatooine, she said. People, good people, don't make it long here, but I still... She trailed off again, shook her head. I didn't think that Zero'd get hurt, she said. She sounded very young. He knew what he was doing, Din pointed out as gently as he could. He was doing his job. Gita nodded. Doesn't make it any better, she muttered. That was fair. Ruli wrapped a comforting arm around Gita's shoulders, and Gita, to Din's surprise, leaned into the comfort. She really was afraid of me, he thought. He cleared his throat. You holding up okay? He asked her, with, you know, The shock of the attack on the palace, with losing friends, with nearly being killed on the Sandra just a few weeks ago. Gita wiped her eyes and nodded. I'm alive, she said. That's better than I thought I'd be when that first bomb went off. I'm fine. I shouldn't be upset. I wasn't there. Nobody attacked me. This time, Din pointed out, it's okay to be upset. You're not upset, Gita said. I'm angry, Din corrected her. I didn't know Zero that well, so I'm not... He wasn't my friend. I'm sorry he died, but not... But it doesn't hurt me. But I'm still angry, Gita. She looked at him for a minute. Ruli looked too. Is that who you're looking for? Gita asked. Someone who helped those thugs attack the palace. Din nodded. Anybody who's still working with the huts, he said. I think I know where they made Planetfall, he said, careful not to say anything more specific in case he was overheard. He didn't want to put a target on Gita's back. Any more of one than she already had, anyway. But to get from where they touched down to the palace, they needed help. Someone here in Mos Eisley helped them. Gita's expression hardened. Someone helped them kill Zero, she said. Din inclined his head. Gita chewed her lip. There was fear back in her eyes, her skin paling again, but she nodded, coming to another decision, and said, Let me tell Lord Fett that I'll ask around, she said. You don't have to, Din said immediately. Concern flickered. She was just a kid. Poking around in hut business was dangerous. Din could still feel the garrote around his neck. That wave of force that had hit him when the grenade had gone off in the throne room. She's just a kid. She doesn't know anything about whisper work, spycraft. But, Din realized, maybe she does. If she's part of the network. Vance people, they weren't spies, assassins, they weren't even hunters, but they know how to look, how to listen, how to move unnoticed. They have to know. It's how they survive. It's... Gita, said Ruli, her eyes dark with worry. Gita silenced the other girl with a look. Don't worry about me, Alara. Let's not talk about it out here. Ruli bit her lip, but nodded. Her Laku shivered. Din could take a hint. He didn't like the idea of Gita in any danger, but... But I couldn't find anything in Bubiska, Din thought. And I'm an outsider here. Everyone knows who I work for, who I am. I can't hide that. But Gita might be able to, if she's willing. He could understand wanting to help get revenge for the death of a friend. Gratua. Gita made them talk about nonsense things as they made their way through the gleaning. Sinsena, she mouthed at Din, which was real. It meant dark work, secrets, smoke and shadows. Gita wanted to put on a show for anyone who might be watching. Maybe she does know what she's doing, Din thought, grudgingly impressed. He played along. Gita asked him, loudly, to tell her about where he'd come from. Din did, in vague terms. He'd lived a lot of places, so he had several memories to pull from. Gita and Ruli both laughed along like Din had told them jokes. Gita touched Din's arm, his wrist. He had to keep himself from twitching away from the contact, actually. Only Bova touched him like that lately. But he knew what sort of hologram Gita was projecting. Here was Din walking down the street with two beautiful young Twi'leks. Din was... He had no formal position in Boba's outfit. He wasn't a lord. He didn't even really like being called Mr. Mandalorian. But Din had power, or was near enough to power, that it amounted to the same thing. And everyone in Mos Eisley knew what powerful men like to do with Twi'lek dancing girls. Din hated it, but he fortunately didn't have to keep up the act for very long. Within a few blocks, they'd made it to the quarter. Ruli's house was small, but there was a Twi'lek man with the same starburst tattoos waiting for her at the door. And when he saw her, he called out, though he flicked a nervous glance at Din. Ruli bounded into the male Twi'lek's arms, waving goodbye to Din and Gita. Come on, Gita said, hooking an arm through Din's. Din, startled, surprised again. Gita had never touched him before. Her leku twitched. Her eyes were sharp. We're still acting, Din thought. Take me home? Gita asked, her voice a smoky purr. Din nodded, uncomfortable. He understood the need for a subterfuge, but... But I've never been an assassin, he thought. Din had never... This sort of thing wasn't what he did. Skulking and hiding, trying to distract or misdirect. Din was a hunter. He hunted. He didn't do this. Gita was decently good at it, though. You need to be careful down here, Gita murmured as they walked. Around Ruli, especially. Her master's the jealous type. He doesn't care if I walk Ruli home, but big, strong man like you. Din's heart sank. Ruli, he said, she's a... A shal? Gita said quietly. The word didn't sound Tuscan or Ahra or hut. It sounded real. Din racked his memory, but couldn't say if he'd heard the word before or not. Yes. A slave. Gita nodded. What, Batran? She asked, her tone light and biting. You thought all of Tatooine would roll over and take Lord Fett at his word? Yes, Din admitted. He hadn't really thought about it, beyond doing that freedom run with Pyrrha, beyond helping Mos Pelgo, but... Boba, he freed you, didn't he? Gita's mother had come before Boba during one of Din's first weeks in the outfit. She'd asked him for help getting Gita back, and Boba had. He did, Gita acknowledged. And I'm grateful, Mr. Mandalorian, but that was just me. You know how many girls like me there are in Mos Eisley? Din's heart sank. Why doesn't... You're part of the network, Din said. Gita shrugged a pretty shoulder. Why didn't Ruli come to ask for help? Din pressed. If Boba got you out, surely she'd know that he'd do the same for her. He's serious. He doesn't freight with slavers. Gita looked at Din sideways. Ruli's master, she said, owns all three of her younger sisters, too. Din straightened up, furious. Who's her master? He could have Ruli freed by the end of the night. Din hadn't wanted to cause trouble in Mos Eisley, but Boba wouldn't be angry if Din had interfered with some slaver's business. Kark Boba would probably want to help. Gita's hand tightened around Din's arm. She was surprisingly strong for as small as she was. She had a dancer's strength. You mean it, don't you? Gita said. She was looking at Din like she'd never really seen him before. You'd help her? Of course I would, Din growled. She's just a kid. Da-fi-da, Gita said. More real. It's not bravery, Din said. It's what's right. Fett, he's outlawed slavery in his territory. Everyone in Mos Eisley knows that. That there are people ignoring that. There are always going to be people who ignore it, said Gita. And Ruli, you think I haven't offered her a way out before? When Kazeek found me, he said he'd put me on a ship if I wanted to leave Tatooine. I begged Ruli to come with me, but she won't leave her sisters. Look around, Batran. Everybody in the quarter has a brother or sister still in chains. A mother, an aunt, a child.
So I go and kill the Shlima who calls himself her master, Din said coldly. And then she and her sisters will be fine.
Gita snorted. A different man owns her mother, she said. Two others own her father, her brothers, her aunts and uncles and cousins. All of them would hurt Ruli's family if word got out that Ruli's master had mysteriously died, that Ruli herself had vanished. That's the way it works. That's how they hold on to power. They use our families against us, our people. No mother's gonna slip her chain if it means she has to leave her child behind. No sister wants to abandon her siblings and make for freedom without them.
Din started, but then he closed his mouth.
Gita didn't need to hear that that wasn't how it should work. She had lived that life, not Din. Din had never been shipped down the Sorrow Lanes. He'd worried about his tribe getting picked up by the Haxian Brood or worse, but he'd never had to live with it. Gita had. Din looked away. He didn't like the old knowing look in Gita's eyes. He didn't like that this had been happening in Mos Eisley and Din hadn't known about it, hadn't thought about it even. I like Gita, he thought. Before, when Din had hunted on his own, before Grogu, he'd stayed away from slaves and slavers both. Had just not thought about it. But Vance, my friend, Din thought. Mos Pelgo, I want to protect its people. I want to protect my people and Boba's. And Gita's one of Boba's. Ruli wasn't, but...
Dafita, Gita repeated, squeezing Din's arm again. But you're just one man. Even Lord Fett's, well, he's a little different, but still. He can't take down every slaver on Tatooine overnight. Ruli, she's okay, really. She's surviving. Her master doesn't hit her. Her sisters are safe enough. She'll get out. Fimuna Siba.
That was Ahra. Din could recognize the flickers of Tuskra in the words. At the right moment, Din guessed. Gita smiled at him.
At the right moment, she agreed.
She guided Din down another street. The quarter was quieter than the Gleaning and much neater. Its homes were small but tidy. The smell of spiced meat hung heavy in the air.
It'd help, though, Gita continued, her voice low. If all the huts were gone from Mos Eisley, right?
Din studied her for a moment. It would, he allowed. Why, you know of any?
I don't, said Gita. She grimaced. Ever since, Mom doesn't like me wandering around much, she said. She's okay if I'm going to pick up Ruli, because Ruli has so many cousins around who can help if something happens. And she's okay when I'm at the palace, but...
But she lost you once, Din murmured. Gita shrugged a little.
I'm all she has left, Gita said. Everyone else is gone, so... I don't leave the quarter much, but I know some who do. I can ask them to look around if you want.
Din hesitated. I don't want to put anyone in danger, he said. The huts. Gorga was either brave enough or desperate enough to attack Boba directly. He's not someone to mess around with.
I can promise you that Gorga the Hutt's not here, Gita said, snorting. He's a big boss. They don't ever come down and slum it in Mos Eisley. But you think that maybe he's still got some people in the city who are working for him?
Din nodded.
I can ask a few of Ruli's cousins, Gita suggested. Kubo's not around anymore. He got some job out in the desert, but Siolo's a bouncer in the Gleaning, and Yuna makes Junko deliveries all over the place.
I don't want anyone to get hurt, Din repeated.
But I'm not going to find the huts without help, Din thought, without knowing where to look at or who to look for.
If Gita could get the Ahra to do a little looking on Din's behalf, if she could find him a direction...
No one will get hurt, Gita assured Din.
She smiled up at him.
We've been doing this a long time, Batron. And if it helps to get rid of the huts...
If Ruli's cousins agree, Din said reluctantly. Then yes, I could use the help.
What are you looking for?
Anyone who still has contact with the Hutt cartel. Someone with access to speeders, specifically. Or blasters, ordnance. A gunrunner, maybe. Smugglers.
Gita nodded. We can do that, she said. If we find anything, I'll send Siolo up to you. He's the oldest. He's blue-skinned, only has one laku. He's got tattoos like Ruli.
Din nodded. I'll keep an eye out, then, he muttered. Anna, thanks for the help. Gita smiled at him again.
You saved my life, she said. And you do mean it, don't you? You'd help Ruli and her family if she asked.
I would.
Then the boys will be glad to help, she said. And we'll be careful, I promise.
If you run into any trouble, find Nora, Din instructed. She'll make sure that me or Fennec or Fett can come and help.
I will, Gita promised.
She tugged Din to a stop gently, and Din realized that he'd brought Gita home. Her front door opened, and Ymiri, Gita's mother, cautiously stuck her head out.
When she saw Din with Gita, her eyes widened.
"Thanks for bringing me home, Manera,"
Gita said, loud enough for her mother to hear. At the endearment, Imiri relaxed. Gita let go of Din, patted his elbow.
"I'll see you at the palace, okay?"
Din wasn't sure when Boba would open the throne room up to visitors again, but he nodded anyway. "Remember what I said," Din warned her, not wanting to scare Gita's mother. Gita just winked. She looked younger like that, with her guarded mask abandoned. Din inclined his head at Imiri, who wrapped an arm around Gita's shoulders and drew the girl inside, nodding back at Din, and then made his way home. He stopped back off at the business district to tell Colburn that he hadn't found anything. Colburn wished Din well, and Din leapt back into the sky. The journey back to the palace took only a matter of minutes. There was a faint light shining from Boba's spire, but Din knew he wouldn't be able to fly directly there. Din dropped to a more reasonable height so he didn't trigger Boba's blast doors at this hour, and landed where he'd started, touching down at the landing bay. The Nuxin had been replaced with a pair of big, brawny Deveronians. There was a Tusken Raider perched up on the roof. "The palace is well guarded, at least," Din thought. He nodded to the Deveronians, who waved him in, and made his way through the palace. Most of the place had been put back to rights. Din skirted the throne room, too tired to deal with looking over its shattered chairs, its char marks, its bloodstains on the floor. But the rest of the palace looked the same as it always did. Fennec was still in the infirmary, asleep, so Din let her be. He took the lift up into Jabba's old tower, crossed the hall, then took the second lift. For once, he stopped in his own rooms first. Boba had likely seen Din coming in from Mos Eisley, But I've been running around all day, Din thought, and I want a sonic before I report in. And a change of clothes. He was going to have to do something about his kuta. Over the course of 2 days, Din had been impaled, slashed, strangled. His kuta showed that wear and tear. If he wasn't careful, the whole thing would be compromised. Din shed his armor, stacking it neatly on his bed. He knew where he wanted to spend the night. And peeled his kuta off, hanging it up over his fresher door. He'd take a look at it in the morning, get it back into working order. He shed his weapons and stowed them into their various places among his kit, then peeled off his sweat-stained underclothes, tossed them aside, and climbed into the sonic. The vibrations made his head hurt a little. Made his left shoulder ache, his right wrist. He deliberately kept his back to the sonic so it couldn't jostle anything more delicate. He still had a few tabs of Suboxone left, but Din left them with his kit. It seemed like cheating, almost, to dull any pain before he went up into Boba's rooms. That was a thought to examine later. Din left the Suboxone where it was and pulled on a change of clothes. He wasn't sure who did the laundry in the palace, but the clothes hanging up in his tiny closet were all soft and freshly washed. He tugged on a loose tunic, open at the collar, and a pair of pants, then padded barefoot back to the turbo lift, which he took up to Boba's rooms. I was right, he thought, stepping out of the lift into the familiar space. Boba saw me coming in. Boba had, of course, brought dinner up. His work table had been cleared of its usual heap of data pads and replaced by a cooked bantha haunch, glazed with something that smelled sweet and spicy, glass rice tossed with nuts and dried tamwar, a stack of fluffy, fresh-baked Jaipur bread. Boba was sitting down, a data pad in hand. When he saw the lift doors open, he lifted an eyebrow. Safe trip, Boba called. He'd shed his kuta and his armor, too. Din nodded, padding over to the empty chair opposite Boba and flopping down into it, looking over the food. Productive? Boba asked. Din grimaced. Boba hummed. Fill me in, he suggested, gesturing at the food. And help yourself. Lines were carved more deeply around Boba's eyes than Din had seen before. He looked tired. Din paused. I can come back later, he said, if you want to rest. Boba snorted at him like a bladeback about to charge. Din couldn't help but smile at him. He reached for a plate of food. Boba let him. If I wanted to rest, said Boba, I would have locked the carking door, Jaren. I want to hear about Mos Eisley, the canyons. Tell me about your day. Din eyed him. Only if you tell me about yours, he said. That seemed like a fair trade to him. Boba rolled his eyes. You first, he said. Some of the lines around his eyes had eased, though. His mouth had softened with fondness. All right, Din agreed, affection blooming behind his ribs, and started from the beginning.